What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Experts Corner interviews, my favorite episode of the week, where we get to interview short-term rental investors diving into this game, hoping to share the good, the bad, the ugly, helping you guys walk into this game with your eyes wide open. We've got a trio today joining us that are diving into the micro resort glamping side of short-term rentals, and something is always a hot topic for investors. We've got Graham Hardy, David Mayo, and Matt Camp joining us from New River Ridge. Thanks, guys, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Great to be here.
Really Absolutely. So Graham has been on the podcast. Those of you that are active listeners and part of the Vodacy family, most of you recognize Graham's name, and is a longtime Vodacy member, dove into the short-term rental game, has been on the podcast before. So Graham, I'm going to start with you, but I want you to kind of lead us into kind of background and how you guys met, and then we're going to really dive into Dave and Matt's story, getting this this New River Ridge going.
Yeah. Thanks, Sean. Well, so yeah, I've been a member of the Vodacy Group since 2023, entered into this space, and really followed your recipe in our first short-term rental back at that time. And during that time, Dave and I both, the three of us have all worked together for almost a decade probably. And Dave and I always had a standing Friday lunch where our teams, we would kind of discuss our teams. And so as I was entering into this space, our conversation started to shift more and more around short-term rentals. And Dave, I think originally you were like, hey, I want to buy some land and do hip camping. But because of the Vodacy approach and how what I was learning, it quickly changed into, you know, transitioning into we want to do this on a much higher scale. And so, Dave, I'll let you kind of take it from that point.
Yeah, I mean, I can pick up there. I would say, and I'll bring Matt into the story as part of this, because Matt and I have known each other for even longer than we've known Graham. We've worked together since
2006.
And we've worked together at multiple companies now, and we've always sort of adventured together, hiking, off-roading, camping, you know, doing things. And we've talked about collectively, you know, this just long-term dream of having some land, and mainly for me, a place in the mountains, you know. And I've had this goal of, I just want a place that's mine that I can get to and have a cup of coffee at sunrise. That's the extent of the goal. And I don't care if I have to hike in, drive in, if there's a cabin or not. It was just always there. But then the reality of, you know, getting later and later and later into career and family and obligations. And I got two girls learning to drive and about to go to college. And it's like, when am I going to get that mountain place? Yeah. Right. And then obviously, too, you saw this explosion in COVID of, you know, property ownership, I would say, in general. And so then I really felt behind, and it's like, I've got to figure out a way to do this. I was camping with my daughter, and we were using Hip Camp. That's what Graham was mentioning. And I thought, you know, this could be a way to just kind of accelerate it, monetize some land you pick up, you know, carve out a spot for yourself and then let others use it and monetize it. And I was kind of looking at the models of how I would make that work. And then Graham joined Vodacy. And I think that really changed the game, because he started talking about things in a way that took it from theory to reality. And actually, Sean, I remember listening to your podcast way back then, and I don't know if you coined this, but your term of lifestyle asset just hit straight to the middle of me. You know, like, this is what I'm talking about. This is something for the family, something as a legacy, but also could be a business opportunity. And so then combining the things I already wanted to do with things that Graham was learning from a, you know, a STR side, and then also keeping it sort of in the angle of very, very connected to nature and outdoor, kind of led us down this sort of glamping and small resort, micro resort path. And then, you know, man, it gets wild from there, from, you know, figuring out how to fund that thing, and then telling Matt he had to be in 50-50, because there's no way I can do this, you know. And I think Matt took all of 30 seconds to convince. So,
yeah. So Matt, yes. tell us, yeah, how did that convincing go? You know, so Dave had the long term vision. He came to you and said, "You're in, brother. It doesn't matter whether you want to or not, right?"
Pretty much. I mean, that's pretty much how it went. Yeah. I mean, like Dave said, I mean, I've been a part. Dave and I's families have been
you know, part of each other's lives for a really long time. You know, we've got kids about the same age. You know, we've kind of grown up together. We moved to Charlotte, you know, to pursue the same, you know, career opportunity as well. And so it's, you know, it Dave is the type of person where, you know, he will analyze and analyze and analyze. And I'm the type of person that's like, great, let's do it. And so it didn't take a lot of convincing when, you know, I had a lot of the same aspirations. You know, we've gone off-roading together and adventuring together. And, you know, I've always similarly had, you know, a desire to own land. And, you know, when Dave started talking about your, you know, lifestyle asset, it, you know, it hit home with me too. And it's something that I've always dreamt about. And then, you know, we had other friends that we worked with. Graham was one of them who started getting into short-term rental businesses, and other people started owning land. And we were like, why can't we do this too? And so, you know, when Dave started doing this research, and he's like, funny story, when he first came to me, this whole thing started off with, we can just buy a couple acres. We can, you know, it won't be a ton of money. We can potentially go through, and I'm sure this part of the story will come in later, but David also listened to some podcasts on financing of these types of things. And this whole thing started off with him pitching to me for not a whole lot of money. We can get an SBA loan, a really low interest. We can buy a couple acres, and on evenings and weekends, we'll just build a house and we can start renting it out. And I was like, that sounds great. Man, we are so far from that. It's not even fun. But yeah, I think, you know, all of it started off with I'm very, you know, analytical minded, but I am also very quick to just, you know, action react. And Dave started looking into this and he started showing me numbers, and, you know, then, you know, quickly turned into what, you know, land opportunities exist out there. And then we started looking at different, you know, properties, and it all just kind of fell into place, you know, from there. And, you know, we both have pursued other opportunities, adventures in the past, and always for one reason or another, it stalled out. And this time, I think Dave and I just looked at each other early on and we're like, are we going to do this? Like, if we're going to do it, we have to do it. Like, every single day has to be a step forward. And, you know, ever since we kind of had that conversation, shoot, I don't know, what was it, probably 18 months ago at this point, it has just turned into, you know, it has been that every day we're just progressing. And, you know, we officially broke ground on our property in April of last year. And we're at the point now where we're getting ready to open. So
that's awesome. Congrats on that, by the way. We're going to talk a lot about that journey, but I know it is not, it's not as easy of a journey as listening and saying, yeah, I'm going to get this SBA loan. I'm going to do this, and this is going to fall in place, and this is going to fall in place. And before we know it, we're going to have this nice resort, right? And there's a lot more that goes into that. So let's talk about making this a reality and the process of taking that idea and the dream of owning some land and, you know, and then really navigating not just the reality when everything falls into place, but navigating some of those challenges that pop up when your area gets hit by a hurricane that normally doesn't get hurricanes, and, you know, all those different things that you're dealing with. Right. And so, but let's talk, because here's what I would love to, for the listeners to know, because these things are really micro resorts, glamping communities are super popular right now. It's an idea that is a lot of people are very interested in it. It went kind of from short-term rentals to boutique hotels to the micro resorts, and this progression of different aspects of the kind of the personalized hospitality space, if you will. And you guys, I think I know why you chose to jump right to here based on the background you just told me. Is we wanted a place in the woods. I wanted a place where I can go, you know, I want to get away and have a cup of coffee and nobody's around and I can hear nature and be with nature and all that stuff, right? So kind of led you down that road instead of just the traditional short-term rental path that might have just been other homes in some of these areas. But as you go through that, the less traditional you get, the less options you have when it comes to financing and, you know, lending options and different things like that. And so I'm sure that that was one of the first things you had to navigate as far as a reality hitting you, saying, this isn't as easy to finance maybe as it is to just go get a loan for a house. Is that one of the first challenges that came up?
Yes and no. It's actually super strange because there are groups out there. And shout out to Live Oak Bank, who helped us through this process. And I was listening to podcasts in the glamping space at the same time and doing, you know, just sort of consuming as much as I could in the process. Ran across Live Oak Bank, who was featured on one of these podcasts as, you know, a high running, you know, high capacity, high volume SBA lender. Turns out they're in North Carolina as well. And just reached out and talked to them. But they had like an RV and campground division of SBA loans. And what's super interesting is that means they were more willing to listen to our glamping idea, yeah, right? And like these small two-person stays, you know, immersed in nature. But it also meant that we spent time teaching them about STR, which sounds stupid coming from me, who's never, you know, been part of an STR. But, you know, with Graham's knowledge and Bodicy background as well, it helped us to start talking to them about, you know, things like not requiring, we don't need to be on the side of an interstate to get foot traffic passed, right, to get volume and occupancy. And it's not going to take, we don't expect it to take 3 years to stabilize occupancy. You know, we talk about cutting rates at the beginning to boost occupancy and then ride the rate ramp up and things like that. It was blowing their minds when they were, we were doing feasibility studies required for the commercial loan process and had to, I don't know if you guys know Ben Wolf at Onera, but we had to call in Ben Wolf, who we were familiar with, but also the feasibility study was familiar with, to come in and basically say, yeah, this is the overlap between short-term rental model and sort of micro resort model, and you can look at it this way. And so it was so odd to, we felt like we were just kind of walking into financing unexpectedly, thought it would be hard, and found folks in this niche that could help us, but then they think in that niche also. So you have to be able to educate in different ways there as well. So it was a very interesting process to walk through.
Yeah, love it. And so as obviously you probably, you put something under contract, or did you line up the financing prior to, like a traditional short-term rental, you're really going to get qualified first and then you're going to go look for the house. When you're talking about more of these types of deals, you probably need to see the deal, right, to get the financing. It's more of an asset-based type of a business loan where they're like, I need to see the details of the deal. So how did you navigate the negotiations with the seller and the time it would require to go get the financing once the deal was there?
Yeah. Matt, you want to talk about that one?
Yeah, it's something I like to talk about a lot. Like, we didn't know what we didn't know going into this process. We didn't know how we would get financing. We didn't know what type of land was available. We didn't know what units we were going to build or how we were going to build it. Like I said, we thought we were going to be building these things ourselves on evenings and weekends. And every step along the journey, we learned a little bit more, and it almost kind of forced us into a particular path. And so our initial journey, I remember very distinctly, like, what really made this real was the first conversation we had with the bank. And Dave and I, we went back and forth on, like, we're not ready to have a conversation with the bank. We haven't found a loan. We don't know what the deal looks like, to your point, Sean. And, you know, but at the same time, we didn't know what we needed to be able to bring to the table for a deal. So it was this kind of chicken or the egg thing. And we just said, look, we're just going to have a conversation and see how it goes. And, you know, Nick Parker at Live Oak Bank was so incredibly helpful and so accommodating for the first conversation. And I'll never forget. He's like, you guys, like, it's going to be way harder than you think, and it's going to be way more expensive than you think. And we were so naive to think that we could do it for what we thought we could back then. But that drove us to understand, you know, the financing limitations, the financing needs, and that led us to, you know, conversations as we started looking for land. And to your point is, you know, we're talking to sellers of land and they're looking for commitments. We had to get commitment letters from the bank in terms of, like, would they be willing to finance a project like this? And so, you know, we had rough ideas of what we wanted to do, how much we wanted to spend. Live Oak had told us, you know, this is about the size project that they'd be interested in, frankly, at the very low end of their range in terms of how they like to look at projects. And then, you know, really, we didn't know how many units we'd be able to build until we found a piece of property, which was a very lengthy process, right? You know, you're looking at raw pieces of land through, you know, through websites and trying to do satellite views and looking at drone photos. And you're like, I think maybe you can put a house here. And Dave and I spent months driving up to the mountains and looking at, you know, four or five different pieces of land in a weekend. And, you know, I just remember, like, hiking on all fours, trying to get up some pieces of land. It's like, well, maybe we could put a road here. And then you hike to the top and you're like, maybe we can get a house here. And so everything, just to kind of jump forward, landed into place when, you know, we were going through this land discovery process, and we came across a piece of land that, you know, we were really interested in. It was about 14 acres outside of a town called West Jefferson, which is in Northwest North Carolina. And, you know, just to expand on that a little further, you know, it's this really nice, you know, level ridge across the top of a mountain with really long range mountain views. And what ultimately led us to the number of units that we could build on that property was going through the early discovery phases with the surveyor, where the surveyor is the one that told us, actually, no, it was the planning department, told us that we could have no more than two houses on a parcel of land. And so we thought we were limited to having two houses on, you know, the top of this property. Well, then we talked to the surveyor, and the surveyor said, well, you can do what's called a house split. So we could actually subdivide the parcel before we bought the land, then divide it again once we bought the land. Now we've got three parcels across 14 acres. Now we can do six houses, right? And so there's so many things that, like, we didn't know going into this project. But long story short, you know, we found a piece of land. It was 14 acres. It's got, you know, fantastic long range mountain views. We actually wound up building five houses, you know, mainly because of the amount of investment we needed to be able to build on and, you know, the space allocations on the property. But yeah, I mean, that's just kind of how the process for the bank and land acquisition went. And, you know, I'm sure we'll fill in kind of the rest of the story after that.
So we're not even to the full acquisition yet. And you've and we've talked about a lot of critical, you know, brains behind the team members, right? The team members, how critical they were in helping you make decisions between the people at Live Oak Bank, where they're looking at it from a business standpoint. They're looking at feasibility studies. This is what we want to do. And they're looking at it from a risk perspective. But you guys are learning a lot because they want to mitigate their risk. So do you. And yeah, you're learning a lot from them. You talk to the planning, you know, the surveyors, the planning and zoning commission, and you're starting to say, okay, here's some other things that we can start to look at and do. And like I'm highlighting that because we talk so much about having those partnerships, the right partners in place and the right partners on your team, because they really are partners in these deals. And just going through the preliminary stuff here, it's helped guide the decisions to where you end up and how you're navigating this entire thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, even from, I'll just add one thing and then I'll just chime in, Dave. I mean, even to your point, Sean, the seller, you know, was a partner in this, right? Like, we had expectations going into this that once we found land and we had already established what we thought we needed from the bank, that we could close in 30 to 60 days. It took almost like 4 or 5 months for us to close. Yeah. And the seller could have easily said, forget it, this is taking way too long, I'm out. So like, you're even talking about like needing to have and establish the right partnership with, you know, the person you're buying the land from, the conversations you're having with the county and the government officials. I mean, it's everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I will tell you, just from my experience of buying land that we're going to be doing any sort of development on, is that's a hard conversation. Like when I was doing a lot of development stuff, is I know how long it's going to take. You guys didn't know how long it was going to take when you started going into this. And sometimes kind of your naivety can be good with the sellers, because you're like, I think we can close on this in 45 days, maybe 60 days, right? And they're like, yeah, let's do it. And then you get 60 days in, you're like, we're not even close. So then you have to kind of renegotiate, right?
Yeah.
The hard part now is the next one. When you go talk to a seller, you're like, I need 4 or 5 months. You're like, they're like, sorry, bro. Everybody else is telling me 30 to 60 days. I'm not doing that. So like the reality, now that you know the reality, sometimes it's hard to negotiate that on the front end. So because you're right, the seller needs to be a partner on the deal, and you have to do a really good job of explaining what you're doing, why they should wait 4 or 5 months, maybe why they're getting a little bit of a premium there, all those different things. And so I'll tell you that for the next one, because the next negotiation is a little harder, because sometimes it's easier to renegotiate than like negotiate the 5 or 6 months up front.
Yeah, no kidding. Definitely. I mean, I think, you know, some people are taking the approach, I want to jump back to partnerships in a second, but some people are taking the approach now, I think, of land acquisition and then approaching the commercial loan process that is essentially business loan. And we have the land. And if you can finance that way, I think, to your point, Sean, about, you know, the difficulty you could run into with seller, that's probably a good idea. But it would have been a terrible idea for us, because one of our partners being Live Oak Bank and then walking us through the process of what we needed to do from a due diligence, and making we then make sure that we were doing upfront diligence before we purchased something, before we even went under contract for something, and then during that diligence period in the contract, really nailing down things, we wouldn't have known what diligence to do. And so we could have really ended up in the wrong spot, right? On land that we could not build, for example, if we didn't walk through the proper zoning steps. So that is super important for us. But also on partnerships, I would just say that, like, leaning on Graham, first of all, he gave us a bunch of money, which is very helpful too. But but Graham's knowledge and access to tools and things like that. I mean, when we were land searching, we would find a piece of land that we liked and we would completely rerun the deal, right? We would be doing air DNA research on the market. We'd be rerunning our own feasibility. We'd be talking about number of units because of the size or layout and re-spinning that every single time and pitching it to the bank, say, what do you think, before we even get to the next step was, I don't think we'd be able to do that with the knowledge and data we had without Graham and Vodacy was, you know, not going to be doable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that it you're right. You have to bring the right people in. And I don't say that to scare people away, because I think if you're coming into this with just a concept, you're like, well, how would I find all of these great partners? And the truth is, you just have to start consuming information. Listen to podcasts like Sean's, listen to podcasts like, you know, we were listening to, what was it, Glampatech North America is what they used to be called. They've rebranded. And finding partners like Live Oak Bank, you know, make sure you work with Graham. I'm just kidding. For 10 years. And then, you'll find the right connections. And I also think that in this space anyway, I don't know about all of short-term rental. You guys would be the experts there. But in this space of glamping and small sort of experiential hospitality, outdoor hospitality, we didn't find anybody that wouldn't talk to us.
Yeah.
I mean, you reach out, you will get contacts, you will get partners.
Yeah. The people want to like network, share their resources, share the struggles, share where they had successes. And like, even like within our Vodacy family, it's been kind of the theme always. It's like, you're just kind of paying it forward. We're trying to learn from each other, trying to continue to raise the bar. Graham started hosting our micro resort and glamping, you know, coaching call. And all of a sudden you get a handful of people that are doing these micro resorts, and you're sharing the resources, you're sharing the lenders, you're sharing the things that you're learning on, you know, what you're doing there. And it just, you're so right. It's so hard to do this stuff just on your own in a bubble, that having the right people around is so critical. And you mentioned something that I don't know if people picked up on, and I want to highlight it back, is the fact that you didn't just have the capital to go buy the land and then go start to do this can be a bit of a, that kind of is a, it was a little bit of a, of an insulation of risk, and maybe avoiding a mistake of buying the wrong land. I actually see that more often than you would think, as somebody that is well capitalized that says, I'm going to go do this, and they don't buy the right piece of property. They can't get the entitlements. They can't get the, you know, there's no way to, you know, navigate utilities, or there's easements that they didn't realize there was in there. And all of a sudden, their back's against the wall before they even start, when they bought this land with this big idea, because all they saw was the land and they didn't really understand all the things that you need to really be navigating with that land. And so it reminds me, I have my pilot's license and I fly, and the golden age of aviation was back in like the 60s and 70s. And you would have, you know, all these great planes coming out, but all the rich, you know, doctors and lawyers were buying them, but they didn't know how to fly, and they just had the money and they're crashing the dang things, right? And so it's like, it's kind of the same thing. It's like, just because you have the money doesn't mean, still means you got, you should have the right partners to say, here's what we're looking for, here's what we don't want, here's what we need to have, all those different things. Yeah. And so we navigate the right piece of property, we identify the piece of property, and so we've negotiated with the seller. So walk me through, because I know that there was a fairly a scary event in the very beginning when you were about ready to close on this thing. And then let's talk about some of the challenges of getting it closed and starting off.
Matt, you want to take the closing day?
Sure. Yeah. I think you're spot on, Sean. And I think, you know, looking back at what we thought at the time was just insurmountable asks after asks after asks from the bank to get to the point of closing. I mean, we're talking about, you know, perk testing and zoning approvals, and, you know, the fact that we're allowed to get internet there and the well there, and we had to do environmental studies and commercial appraisals. I mean, just the list goes on and on and on. It felt like we're like, all right, we're ready to close that yet? Nope, we got to do this thing.
Yeah.
Get through all that, and we finally get an opportunity to close on the property. And we are supposed to be closing on the day of Hurricane Helene. And so Dave and I just made the decision. We're like, one step in front of the other, we have to go, right? We just got to keep moving forward. So we drive up to Ashe County to the attorney's office the morning of the hurricane, and we're sitting in a coffee shop, and it is just downpouring. The streets are flooding. I mean, it's just a sight you've never seen before. And, you know, we're like, we just keep asking, like, are we still on for closing? And we saw, yep, we're still on. So we walk across the street. You know, we basically have to take our shoes off and walk through a river, you know, going down the street. And we walk into the attorney's office. And, you know, they said, are you guys ready to close? We say, yep. And so we start walking back. And the second we start walking back, the lights shut off. Power gets lost all across the town. And so we're like, all right, well, what do we do? Long story short, we wound up closing, signing all the documents through phone lights. So we're using our phones. They couldn't even scan the scanners for our driver's licenses wouldn't work to be sent off for, you know, for different agencies to be able to close on the loan and the banks and all. Like, there's nothing they could do. So we signed all the documents. And then we drive over to the property after closing. Oh, I forget. The second we finished, I jokingly said during closing, I said, watch, the second we finish with all these documents, the lights are going to come back on. That actually happened. We literally finished. We were getting up. The lights turned back. And we're like, go figure. Yeah. So it's just general chaos from the hurricane. We drive over to the property. We've closed on this property. We have no idea what the condition is from the hurricane now. So we drive over there. We can't get to the property because road closures, things are flooded. We wound up having to go back roads around a different direction. We get out there and the weather winds up being, you know, beautiful after the hurricane. But that was really only the beginning of the devastation in the mountains because of all of the flooding that happened afterwards.
Right.
And so we actually, long story short, like, we're at the property, we're just kind of exploring. Fortunately, there was not a lot of damage to our property, but we decided to try and get to a friend of ours' property. And in the process of doing that, almost got stuck in the mountains because all the roads and the bridges and everything were washing out. So it was a very adventurous close to the project. And Dave and I were always looking back like, I think this was a sign. Like, every step of this.
I love that you didn't lose the enthusiasm. You're like, yeah, lights are out. Use the phone. I'm not even sure if we closed or own this property yet.
I mean, there are so many stories throughout this project that are just like, it wouldn't be New River Ridge without. We had a friend come up one time. He was helping us install cabinets. We went out to eat afterwards, and he called. And we're like, all right, well, we'll see you later. We're heading back to the property. He was headed home. He calls us. His car in downtown West Jefferson, somebody called in a bomb threat on his car and they wouldn't let him leave. We're like, are you like, where you can't make this stuff up?
In the mountains of Western North Carolina, huh?
It's the amount of crazy stories that happen.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, and West Jefferson, we should spend just a second talking about, because West Jefferson is this cool little mountain gem, you know. I think there are a lot of these out there, but when you happen on one of these where it's having a moment, there's some rejuvenation going on, some turn in the retail and hospitality market in that area. And it's, you know, outside of Boone and in our opinion, even nicer, you know, the coolest corner of North Carolina. But anyway, it's a hopping little town. And we're there. I don't know if that was a Friday or Saturday night, Matt, when we were there, it was weekend. But every single parking space in downtown is taken in West Jefferson right now. I mean, it's absolutely packed full. So the fact that our friend's Jeep is the one that gets the bomb threat called in, it's like, this is definitely our story. Like, you're attached, buddy. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not so sure I wanted this podcast going out. I'm going to have some sort of an attachment here. Like, I'm going to wake up and have something going on.
Yeah.
No,
that's
awesome.
The good news is we always power through it. So
these are the best stories, right? You're like, hey, listen, it wouldn't be any fun if it all worked out. I always tell people that. I'm like, when you look back and tell a story that everything was perfect, nobody cares about that story. Yeah. We don't even want to listen to that story, right?
Right. I will have to say, Sean, as kind of the outsider going through this with them, I've been amazed at the resiliency these two have had because, you know, from cement trucks stuck on the side of the road to like, building the road three times. Like the fact that like they always take on the next step and like, all right, we got to figure it out. You know, whatever it is, has been pretty remarkable.
Isn't it fun? And I'll speak for what I would be if I was in your shoes, Graham, but isn't it fun when you invest into something and those are the guys running it? Like it's like, I'm very, very, very hesitant at this stage in my life to invest with anybody because I never feel like they're going to have the resiliency I have. And when you partner with guys that actually have it, isn't it fun to look back and be like, man, those are my guys. Like I'm so glad to be a part of this.
You know what never made it a doubt for me is how badly they both wanted it. You know what I mean? And it's like, because of that, you know, any obstacle, whether it was, you know, an 85-year-old person who wouldn't sign something and got kicked off the family trust because of it, or, you know, whatever thing they ran across. There was a time, Matt, what was the time where, like, the circular reference of things that couldn't get done, like the thing had to be pressure locked before that? It just, like, figure out how to do it. You know, that was always the encouragement.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, Sean, if you want to spend just a minute, we can kind of walk through the building process. You tell us.
For sure. And that's where, for sure. Like, so we went, this was basically a year ago, right? We're essentially 12 months into this. And as you dive into the building process, what I kind of lead into it and ask you guys is, you know, you were saying, hey, listen, you're looking at each other in the very beginning and say, if we're doing this, we're doing it, right? We're all in. We're showing signs of that already. We're like, hey, listen, we're not backing down, one foot in front of the other. Today, we're making progress. How much time did you budget going into it, and how much time did it take versus what you were planning on? Because I know you guys, I've been kind of stalking a little bit from the outside when Graham shares some pictures with me. You guys were spending some time there. So I don't know if that was all planned, but I'm going to let you lead into kind of the build out process from there.
Yeah, I mean, to start with, Dave and I both have full-time jobs on top of this. So, like, Dave told me the other day, he's like, I haven't had a day off in, like, 4 months. Because it's, like, work, and then second work, and then weekend work, and then back to work. So it's just nonstop. But, I mean, it's been a solid – so just, you know, after we closed on the property, we've gone through two GCs. We had to basically part ways with the first one, start a second one. Then winter hit where we tried to build a road. If anybody's ever tried to build a road in the mountains in the winter, don't do it. Just wait till the summer.
Right.
It'll cost you a lot more time and money in the long run. Yeah. We've done it three times now, as Graham alluded to. And yeah, I mean, it was, you know, obstacle after obstacle. I mean, it was, you know, we needed to dig a well. Somebody's got to be there for the well company. We needed to park for, you know, the septic. Somebody needed to be there for that. We needed to be on site to pour cement. We needed to be there for that. The cement truck gets stuck. Somebody needs to be there to help get them out. I mean, it's just, it has been, when you say, like, what should you plan for? I don't know what the multiplier is, but it's got to be three or four times as much time and effort and money as you think it's going to be to get through a project like this. It is. I literally turned to Dave.
You say that, but I honestly don't know how to feel about this, because on the one hand, of course, it took us longer than we expected. If you really look at how long it's taken us, though, we are less than 1 year right now from groundbreaking. Now, we did spend some time, like, cutting that road first. So that was before. But, like, when you talk about foundations started on April 1st, which, of course, April Fool's Day, of course, we start building on April Fool's. But April 1st of 25, and we are less than a year from there, and we're operational right now. We haven't, you know, actually gone live on Airbnb and whatnot because we're waiting on some professional photos, but we're ready to go. To me, that's pretty great for five houses on raw land with, you know, infrastructure we had to put in, but we did think it was going to be less.
But I think that's the key, is looking at from the outside, looking in, being a developer and developing for years, building homes for years and doing all that stuff. You guys made a lot of progress in a year. Yeah. It's usually, though, the first time you go in, you don't think it's going to take that long.
That's right. You have no idea. So we definitely did underestimate. Good
job with it. You just didn't think maybe it was going to take that. Or maybe you did. No. But that's where I think in a year, I would totally agree with you, Dave. Looking from the outside, looking in, you guys did a great job.
And
it looks amazing from where it started to where it is with the challenges. I just think sometimes when you haven't done it, you're like, man, this is – when the bank says it's going to be take longer, it's going to be more expensive.
Yeah.
That's just because they've funded these projects before. They've seen them. And when you haven't done it, it's really good advice to still know that it is you're probably till you've gone through it. And I will tell you that not a lot of people are willing to put in every single weekend, every single day. It's like, I don't really feel like going up there today. Yeah. I don't really feel like going and meeting that. And so you put it off and you put it off. And so I would 100% agree with you both. I think that, you know, two things can be right at the same time. One, you can underestimate how long it's going to take. And two, you can be really efficient and do a pretty quick job with it. You know, and I think that that's where you guys are looking back at right now in that process.
I think part of that, too. I'll just real quickly, Matt, and then you can go. Part of that is just being a really, really, really aggressive with ourselves and saying we haven't missed a date until we miss that date. We set aggressive dates. We drive to them. We miss them. We're not going to miss them until that day, right? We're not going to give up that date until we've missed it. And if you keep doing that, then you're saving time every time, right?
Yeah. I was just going to say, Sean, I mean, the other thing that I think is can't be understated is you going back to your comment earlier, partners, right? Like, find yourself a really good partner that you can do this with, because trying to do this on your own, you will go insane and you will not make it. Like, I mean, there's not enough time in the day. There's not enough energy to go around. There's not enough literal hands and, you know, voices to have all the conversations that need to be had. So, I mean, I think you can't understate having had a great partner to go through this with and know that, you know, when you're unavailable or can't be there, somebody else can. So
yeah. It's so true. And because you both have good days and bad days, and what you're hoping is you're when you're having a bad day, your partner's having a better day, and you know, you can pick each other up when you need to and push each other when you need to. And Dave, I love the where you guys said, hey, listen, we gave ourselves a date. We're not giving up on that date till it passes. And I mean, that's just an indication of a high performer, right? It's like, hey, listen, we're going to be aggressive. We're not going to give up. We're going to do whatever it takes to hit those dates because they mean something to us. Like, deadlines mean something to us. And that's high performers in general, right? They're super competitive with themselves. They're their own worst critics. And when you have high performers working on something, that's just what it is. And, you know, when you're having a bad day and Matt says, hey, listen, Dave, you know, you've never missed a date. You're like, you know, all he has to say is something like that. And you're like, yeah, shit, I'm not missing this one. Right. Or you say that to him and he's like, it's almost like a little challenge that we have within our groups and our partners and everything else. You don't even really have to push them that hard. You're like, oh man, that's not like you. Usually you're always hitting that. That's kind of, you know, and you get that little pick me up sometimes just with a challenge almost. And having the right people to go through that with is critical. And it's, you know, you look back and look what you did, like you said, Dave, in a year, and it's pretty amazing. So let's talk about where it is right now. Like, let's talk about, you know, we're at that launch phase. That's a super exciting phase. There's actually something tangible that we worked on. It looks amazing. People are going to start enjoying it. So tell me like where it's at right now and kind of what the future plans are for New River Ridge.
I don't know if this is a common terminology for you guys, but I think of it as the long tail. Like, we talk about this in product a lot of times, where there are, you know, we went through the huge part of work that you can identify up front and you know, but what you can't see as you approach launch is this 9 million mile long tail of a million small things. And so we constantly are in a situation where we're like, we feel done and we feel like there's a never ending stream of things in front of us somehow simultaneously. And that it's maddening, really. But I think, was it today or yesterday, man, I looked at you and I said, I think they're ready. You know, like, we might actually be there, you know, like, it's so weird because every time we think they're ready, there's like, oh, we've got to do this. And there's all these things. And there's definitely stuff that's not done. You know, we've got to finish up, clean up landscaping. We've got internet run, fiber dug 2,500 feet up a mountain that they wouldn't start until we had permanent power, even though I told them, guys, it's a mountain, you know, get started. We finally get that connected, but they connected one house. Now we've got to chain fiber to the others. So, I mean, there's things that we know we have to do, but we could open and operate today if we needed to. Like, you can stay there and have a wonderful time. So we're calling that ready to go. Yeah. Future plans, I mean, I think I still don't know. At every step of this process, we don't know what we don't know. So probably once we are truly operational, we're going to learn a lot about operating. We're self-managing. We're, you know, using owner res and, you know, just getting things like messaging templates in place, you know, integrations with locks and OTA channels. So I'm sure we're going to spend a lot of time learning, but we do have more plans for the property going forward. I don't know if, Matt, you want to touch on that.
Yeah, I think just for timeline. So we actually soft launched. We got our COs on December 30th. So we actually soft launched the project and had bookings, you know, very, very late last year. And then going into this year, it's really been all about, like, you know, finalizing the furnishings, finalizing the landscape, getting the final, internet installed and getting it really ready. We've had friends and family come and stay up there. So, I mean, we've been operating and we're really getting to the point where it's like, okay, now we can publish them on Airbnb and VRBO. So that's really where we're at today. We actually did our official photo shoot with O2O this past weekend. It was a lot of fun. It wouldn't be New River Ridge without a beautiful day of staging and then ready to photo shoot and it downpours. So we had to work around all of that. But yeah, I mean, little things like, you know, the road, it's a pretty steep road. It's a mountain road. We've had to recut it a couple times to try and get some turns out of it. We just had a guardrail installed, putting the guardrail in, made a mess of the road. We had to re-gravel that. Same thing, you know, as we have, you know, friends and family and, acquaintances stay up there, we're optimizing our cleaning crew. We're getting, you know, the shed ready for extra supplies. You know, we actually did also acquire, the bottom half of the property. So it's actually another 14 acres. So now the overall property is 28 acres. So as we start to finish up the upper part of the property where there's the five tiny homes, I don't think we talked a ton about it, but each of the homes it's 288 square feet. It's one bed, one bath. It's a king size bed, full kitchen, full bathroom. It's got this beautiful big panoramic door that you can open up and get a full view of the sunrise. So all the houses face sunrise. We actually installed these doors that open up from the bathrooms. Dave likes to call them the freedom showers. I get a lot of weird comments on Instagram about that. Like, wait, is that a door in the shower? Like, yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah, shower outside if you want. Right?
Yeah, it's an outdoor shower. Exactly. But, so it's a lot of those little things. And then, you know, as we, you know, hopefully start to ramp up on
like this. This isn't like roughing it glamping stuff. I mean, these are very nice little cabins. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, really big, you know, walk around decks. There's grills at every house, hot tubs at every house, you know, deck furniture and loungers. And we're very, very proud of, you know, what we've been able to accomplish. We've had, you know, fantastic people. Our GC was fantastic. Our house designers were fantastic. Friends and family coming up and supporting us have been great. So we're proud of what we've accomplished, but we're pretty much there.
What's the plans for the lower 14 acres that we acquired? Is that going to be more glamping? Are you going to put more homes on that? What are you thinking down there?
Yeah, I mean, I think we will keep the concept of glamping, even though what we're talking about right now opening is very, very elevated in multiple ways. But at the creek side, we are talking about what you would, I think of more traditionally as glamping, sort of salt side tents, you know, neat accommodations, very, very, you know, luxurious camping, but actual camping, right? And so we think we could carve out, you know, quite a few sites down on the lower part of the property. It's a beautiful meadow with an absolutely gorgeous creek running through it. It's a really, really nice space. And it really feels, when we were able to acquire that mid-build, which was also a challenge, but when we, you know, we're in the middle of spending all this capital and we're like, we've got to get it, because it really felt just like a puzzle piece together with the other part of the project. And yeah, we're going to have to really buckle down, get operational, see some cash flow and understand the operation of New River Ridge as it stands today before we're really ready to take any risk there. But it's a great opportunity going forward to sort of have both those levels of glamping.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And I think that, yeah, it's I'm excited for the future for you guys. It's been, I mean, I know as much and as hard as you worked through that, launch, getting it set up and built out and launched and everything else. I know you're like nervous about the operational side. I think that's going to be the easy part for you. So you'll be looking for the next project soon, which is going to be that bottom portion. Probably it sounds like.
I'm looking forward to the downhill.
Yeah. I'll tell you guys, and just from like I worked with a lot of investors that are high performers. They get through this setup phase, right, in the build out phase, and then they're like, I just need a break. They're comfortable with a break for, I swear, less than 30 days. You start having longer than a 30-day break, they're like, I think something's wrong. Like, I need to be doing more. I need to be, like, there's something else I need to be doing. I hear that all the time. So I'm curious if we're going to hear that from you guys.
Maybe. After the photo shoot, we had, like, Graham went and helped us with the photo shoot. Of course, Matt and I were up there. We've stayed in three of the cabins and we were moving stuff around and everything. So I said, oh, let's do a turn for a hospitality turn of all five cabins. after this, because I need to operate my, you know, turno with my primary cleaner and my backup cleaner and get linens rolling and everything. Yeah. And it went pretty smoothly, I will say. So I think we're closer to ready anyway for operation.
Good. You know, there's, I'm excited for it to get fully launched and get people in there. You're launching right at a great time of year, getting ready for that summertime crowd to come in. And, you know, it's just it looks like a beautiful project, really fun little cabins. I mean, like you said, with those panoramic views, the decks, the hot tubs. I mean, it looks like a pretty fun place to be. So those of you listening, you guys know we post links to all of these properties. So you can go check out New River Ridge at newriverridge.com. But we'll put that in the show links so you guys can go check it out. We'll have some of their Airbnb links. We'll have some of those new photos that we just got done. And in fact, as we spoke before we start hitting record, they're just getting edited right now. So we're going to do our best to have those on there when the show launches on Friday. And so at the end, guys, I always ask you one question. I'd love you to each answer it. Is going back, looking back, all the challenges and the things that you went through. I know we've talked about a lot of the lessons learned. Is there anything that you wish you knew for the next project? Give your younger self some advice. Are there things that you're glad you didn't know because it might have kept you from doing something? But you're like, what would you tell your younger self if those people listening that you could give them one piece of advice about?
You can go first, Matt.
I think the biggest thing is you can do a lot more than you think you can. I think if we had told ourselves that this is what we were in for, we never would have done it, honestly. And I think there's the old adage of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And like, I like genuinely feel like I am a more resilient person, you know, husband, friend, like I am so much stronger having gone through this project than beforehand. So I would say, you know, take the leap, do it. It won't kill you. You can do it. It's a lot of fun. But we'll also see how it turns out when we start operating. So it's been a lot of fun.
I mean, I'll touch on resiliency too. I told someone partway through it that, you know, we tell our kids that stuff they're going through is character building. And I probably hadn't done any character building in quite a while, but boy, have I built some character on this project. I mean, there were times I wanted to jump off that mountain, no question. You know, just like, what are we doing? How am I going to move forward? But you will move forward because there's only one way to move. It's forward, right? I mean, what are you going to do? You've got to complete this. So, and I think you do need to have that mindset and you need to know you do, but then you're going to accomplish that. And I think it was just the other day, Matt said to me, like, you know, I can tell you've changed. Like, there, nothing phases you anymore. So, well, maybe that's true. Tactically, I would say what I would tell my younger self is get a freaking property with some infrastructure. Like, I don't want to build another road and another and run power and dig a well and run fiber up a mountain. Like, can I just have like a spot that's got, you know, sewer?
The utilities are 50 feet away and I can just tap into them.
Yeah, right? There's a pole right there. Let's take it. You know, that would be great.
Love it. Love it. Graham, what do you want to add to that?
I think when I did your podcast a couple of years ago, I said take more calculated risks. So I guess I've done that a little bit.
Yeah,
more,
you followed your own advice. I like it.
Yeah, it is. No, but I think, you know, when you have great partners like these guys, it's been a blast, honestly, from my standpoint, because I didn't have to do all the work. But when Dave and Matt and I would get together and I get to hear the stories, you know, each week or a couple times a week, and just like the laughs we would have through this was pretty enjoyable, because it's been quite a fun thing just to be a bit of an outsider and be a part of. So yeah, I mean, you got to do more of this. So now I'm on to like, what's the next big thing to do?
Yeah. That's awesome. I love it. And I love, and just listening to the story, you know, it's like you, to your guys' points about the resilience and you can do hard things and just the confidence it builds and the things that, the way you grow and just you just feel stronger, right? And hearing those stories, like, we feel that for you. And I appreciate you guys sharing that, the story and the challenges and the ups and the downs. I think the future definitely looks bright for you guys. And so I'm excited to hear how this first year launch goes and rolling into some operational, maybe a few challenges here and there, but I think you guys got all the challenges, you know, under control. We'll say that, right? They're not that those dragons aren't behind those corners, but I think you've got it perfectly under control. You got a great partnership. So proud of you guys. Appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thanks very much.
A lot of fun.
Okay, awesome, guys. Well, listen, those of you listening, we know your time is valuable too. I know you love these shows as much as I do because you tell us. And so appreciate your time spending it with us. We know it is valuable. At the end of these episodes, I ask you two favors. The first one is, if you know somebody who would like these shows and like to be a part of these conversations, share the show. I don't run ads or sponsorships, so the only way this show grows is if you guys share it. If you don't have anybody to share it with, like it or review it on whatever podcast platform you're watching or listening on, and the algorithm will share it with other people just like you. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website?
Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.